All right, the recording is on. I need to go ahead. We need to go ahead and start. But before we start with the presentations, let me mention that many of you may have asked great questions tonight that I did not get a chance to answer in a public format, which means some of the answers of questions usually help other students answer their own questions, even if they didn't ask. So I did not get a chance to do that tonight, but my goal is to go over those questions and answer individual ones. I will, if there is anything that you asked that needed an answer, I will answer that and email it to you within the Moodle site as I've done before. So you will get an answer for important questions that you ask, whether it's something that you will need to know for the next speech or something that's still unclear based on what we've covered so far. I'll go over those and let you know, and give you an answer, a direct answer. Other students will not have the opportunity to hear the answers to those questions, but individual student who asked those questions will get an answer from me in writing, okay? Just to make sure that I get your questions answered. Now, let's go ahead and take an order in terms of who is going when and in what order. We could have everyone who is in the classroom go first and then go in that order for the ones that are online, or we could do the other way so that we maintain one format consistent. So If we do the classroom first, who wants to go first? Between the two people we have in the classroom.
I don't know.
Rachel?
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Mia, that means you're going next.
Okay.
Okay, for online, who wants to go first online after Mia?
I will.
Is that Cassie?
Julie.
Oh, Julie, okay. Wants to go next after Julie.
I can go after Julie.
That's Cassie?
Yes.
We still haven't had anyone else pop up online, so I guess by default, Anthony would go after Cassie.
I'm always getting last here.
Anthony, in this case, well, it's ladies first.
I know. It's all good.
Ladies first. Yes, that's right. That's right. And remember, last shall be first.
Whoa.
Nothing bad about the first, the ones who are first, but
yeah, buddy.
So then that means I'm the
second. It's just to encourage. That's right.
I can't see the second.
I'm still the cream in the Oreo cookie.
First shall be last. Last shall be first. Right, Anthony?
That's right.
Okay. So fifth here. All right. right, so let's go ahead and have Rachel. All of you had a chance to look at the informative speech evaluation form that I mentioned last week.
Yes.
Right? Okay. So if you remember, one of the sections on that form has to do with time in terms of how long your speech was. It's supposed to be between 6 and 8 minutes. And if you speak less than 6 minutes, you automatically lose 5 points. If you go too much over 8 minutes, like 9, 10, you automatically lose 5 points. If you speak 8 minutes and 40 seconds, you lose nothing. As long as you don't go at least a minute or more, you would not lose anything. Does that make sense? But you need, the minimum needs to be 6 minutes. Okay? Hopefully you rehearse that and you know the timing and so forth. That's not gonna be an issue. Rachel?
Yes, sir.
You ready to go?
I guess that means that the people in the classroom are going first, not the people online.
Oh, I thought that's what I said.
That's fine. That's fine. I can go.
Oh, did you think I was going to make the people online go first?
Well, I was kind of hopeful, but you know, that's
okay. Oh, you were hopeful. Okay. Well, sorry about that.
That's okay. Can y'all see me okay? I don't know.
Yes, we have. I can see you okay. Very well.
I'm going to move this chair just to.
Sure, that's fine.
Okay. I'm going to start whenever.
So, will you be sharing your screen with us or no?
Yes, I will, but. In
okay. Okay, when you're ready to do that, you know how to do that. Correct. Okay.
Okay. So, all right, I'm just going to go ahead and start things off. So, as far as time-wise goes, now is the time. All right, I need everybody to hold up your thumbs. You can look one, I'll look two, whatever works. Okay. Well, that's good, but I don't see anybody with a green thumb. So I don't know about you guys, but I'm not the best at gardening, but I'd like to change that. I'd like to get a little better. So today, my topic is going to be on how to start a vegetable garden. Let me pull up my Prezi for you guys. I have a presentation. Oh, if I can figure out how to get behind this. There we go. All right. So here we go. I want to just share my thesis with you really quickly. I hope to inform all of you of the details involved in starting your first garden so that we might all have a better chance in developing a green thumb. And I know that seems kind of cliche, but it's just following me on this. Okay. So in this speech, I have a few main points. I'm going to discuss with you what to plant, how to keep up your garden, the final product, and then what to do once you're done with your garden. Okay.
Oh, thanks. I forgot. Sorry, guys. Pause on that.
Let me put my headphones or microphone, whatever this is, on. Y'all can be thinking about your favorite vegetable while I do this. Okay. Where was I? All right. Okay, preview. My main points. We discussed that. All right, let's move on. Okay. Now I lost the mouse. First, we're going to talk about what to plant. So it's important to know what you like, and it's important to know what's in season. If you're planting something that you don't really like, then it's not likely that you're going to keep up with the final product. You know, you want to have something to look forward to when you're making a garden. Also, it's really important to know it's in season because you want to get the most out of your crop. So it's important to know things like the summer seasons. What is it, you know, what's good to plant? So I picked summer just because, you know, it's coming up and everybody really doesn't care about the other months right now because it's the end of the semester, it's coming to a close. So you see in May, you can plant anything from, you know, beans, beets, peppers, melons, anything like that. Also, June, July, and August have similar vegetables that you can plant. So you kind of have an idea of what to do in that situation. So next point, we're going to talk about how to plant your garden. So now you know what you want to plant, but how do you actually go about planting that? The first and most important thing is to find the area for your garden. So if you need to find something that has good soil, good sunlight, access to water, you might want to plant it just right outside your garden or your kitchen window, just in case you want to reach out and grab a tomato while you're cooking, you know. Be strategic about it. It may require you mapping out where you want to plant it, how you want to plant it. All right, so here's some tips on preparing your soil. So like I was saying, just general steps. It might help to have a sketch of what you want your garden to look like. That way you don't get out there like building a house and completely not know what you're doing. So be sure to test the soil. Also, our second point, be sure to test the soil for proper drainage. You don't want to drown your plants, but you don't also don't want them to be parched. So there's a few tips there on that, but also be sure to loosen the soil. You don't want your plants to have a really hard time growing. You want them to actually enjoy their home and be able to blossom into what they're supposed to. So, like I said in the third point, it may be necessary to use a tiller, or if you're just making a small garden, you can use your hands or a little shovel or something. So then the last tip is to plant the seeds a decent distance apart. So in a garden, you think of, you know, the classic rows of like corn and cabbage. And in that scenario, you would want to plant them about 18 inches apart so they have room to grow. But that's just kind of depending on how much you plant and where you plant it. So our next point is garden upkeep. So I have some nice pictures of a really pretty garden, which is what you want your garden to look like. It's important, you know, you learn this in elementary school. Water your plants regularly, remove the weeds, fertilize. Make sure they have plenty of sunlight also. They enjoy the outdoors. So in Texas, it's really important to make sure they don't have too much sunlight, which would also be good to keep it planted next to your house. That way they kind of have some shade from your house there. Also, make sure to water them regularly. Again, with this Texas heat, it is unbelievable sometimes, and I think we all know that. So be sure to water them regularly. You don't want to give them too much water so that they drown, but you also, you know, want to make sure if the top inch of soil is still dry, you want to make sure that they're watered, and you kind of keep to a periodical schedule with that. So removing the weeds, you don't want them to come in and steal the nutrients, steal the water from your plants. So you want to remove the weeds, and then it might help to stir up the soil, the top layer, just to keep the weeds from growing. So you're always in your garden, always there with your plants. You know, you can talk to them if you want. They like the oxygen. Might seem a little weird, but you know, people do it. Okay. Also, we want to make sure that you fertilize because you want to get the most out of your plants. So you don't want that to get in the way of them not producing a good crop. All right, so now that we have worked in our garden, we've made sure they have plenty of sunlight, plenty of water, good soil to grow in, we want to know what to do with our final product. So clearly you're going to go out there, you're going to pick your vegetables. So that would be the harvest. Also, back to our first point, you need to enjoy your garden. So don't plant something like if you don't like tomatoes, don't plant tomatoes. Just because they're easy doesn't mean that they're worth it. Okay, so also we want to share our vegetables just because, you know, sharing is caring. Anything that you do is always better shared with people that you love and people that you think it's important that they, you know, eat their vegetables in this case. And then I share just a little link. This is my mom's zucchini bread recipe. And I don't know if you guys like zucchini bread, but this is amazing. So if y'all just want to like take a picture of this or come find me afterward, you can totally have this recipe. It's very simple, very good. You can eat it, you know, at breakfast, or you can eat it with coffee, whatever you want. But this is just kind of a final product of what you can do with your vegetables. So look forward to that. If you like zucchini, plant zucchini, use this recipe. Just a little plug for mom there. You're welcome, mom. Her name's Annette. Everybody should love my mom. Okay. Just a concluding statement. We may not have all grown a green thumb while sitting here, but I do hope that you have learned more about the steps of starting a garden. All that we have left to do now is start the gardening journey. So on that note, I want to finally close with this Bible verse, because I think that God has, you know, he's called us to grow, and not only with ourselves, but also to grow in what we learn. So maybe a new hobby like gardening. I'm just going to read this verse real quick and then I'll be done. And the Lord will guide you continually and satisfy your desire in scorched places and make your bones strong, and you shall be like a watered garden, like a spring of water whose waters do not fail. And I just want you guys to remember that and be encouraged that if a garden can grow in Texas, so can we. Thank you, guys. That was it. I don't know if I just leave this here.
All right. Very good. Did I hear clapping anywhere? I thought I heard clapping.
I'm just trying to get the recipe.
You're just trying to.
I'll email you.
Okay. Well, I'm sure she can get that to you if you're interested, as she said. Good job, Rachel.
Thank you.
You laid out this very well in terms of the steps and how. The process goes and so forth. So I enjoyed listening to your speech. Your
I can't
layout.
Hear you, Professor.
I'm sorry? What did you say?
Mm-mm.
You can't hear me?
No.
Really?
I can hear you pretty good.
Who else cannot hear me?
That's weird. I don't know what happens there, Julie. I'm not muted, obviously.
I'm going to exit the meeting and come back. Maybe that'll help.
Can you hear anybody else, or you just cannot hear me?
I can barely hear you.
Can you hear anybody else, or can you just hear the professor?
Barely hear you.
Hmm, that's strange.
I'm going to exit and come back. Maybe that'll help.
Yeah.
Okay, let's try that. Okay. Any words for I know you guys are going to be submitting a feedback, I think, in the forum for a few of the speeches that you watched. So I guess we don't need to take the time to ask individual ones here to give feedback, just so that we can at least keep moving. So make sure to, if you decided to submit feedback to Rachel, be sure to do that on her speech and let her know how she did. For me, I think she did well. In terms of the organization, that went very well. I wanted to see other sources cited. I know she talked about the Bible. There's a verse, but I also wanted to see other sources to solidify the research part of it. Other than that, I think you did very well, Rachel.
Thank you.
And And the next person we have here will be Mia, is that correct?
Yes. I turned it off, I may have to turn it off.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
I can hear you, but I'm sitting right here, so.
What, is he? Oh, he's not talking.
Yeah. Oh, he's muted, but yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yes, Mia, I can hear you. If that's what you're asking, I'm sorry.
For sure. Okay. All right, so I need you all to imagine being in a prison, okay? And you don't know why. You're in your cell. You're alone, and there's people next to you, but they're just barely out of reach, okay? This is what it's like to have a mental illness. You know everyone around you is affected, and they're fearful, but no one will admit it. So the people that are weak are set aside, and there are pros and cons of sort of staying to yourself within a prison. So the pros are obvious. You know, you stay to yourself and nothing changes and you're protected. Nobody bothers you. But the cons are that you miss the point of being in prison, and that's to recover and to improve. So despite the fact that there are 45 million people in America that are diagnosed with a mental illness, they don't receive a lot of treatment. And that comes from the National Association of Mental Illness. We see that mental illness doesn't just affect the person that has it, it affects everyone around them. And because it's so common, we just don't see it because it's that common. So it's kind of backwards almost. So in that way, we see kind of each other, and we're walking through like the halls, and we're walking through our workplaces, and 1 in 5 of us will have a mental illness. So that means that the chances are really high that we know one, or I mean, often even more than one person that has a mental illness, but they'll never say it directly to us. And so because it affects everyone, I believe that we need to create a stronger community, not just for those people, but in general, you know, through our churches, through our classrooms. I know that, like, at this school specifically, there are a lot of groups, and you're kind of grouped into which sport you play and whether you're a Christian or not, and then which denomination you are. And that kind of leads us, whenever we leave, you know, it leads us to create different pathways outside. And so as Christians, I believe that we're called to do that. And I think that a great place to start is with mental illness. You know, we see that Christ goes to those people that are seen as kind of weak, right? And they're not always like the most stable people. And that's how we see people with mental illnesses today, and that's not the way that we should see them. And there's an article that I read from, it's a website called The Mighty, and it's dedicated to changing the way people see different chronic illnesses, which, I mean, they range from like autism to Alzheimer's and, you know, bipolar disorder and depression, things, you know, kind of that sort. And there was one that really struck me, about a woman who lost her best friend to mental illness, but she knew that she had it, and her friend was kind of hiding it because she didn't want to be a burden. She didn't want to be like a hindrance on her. And I mean, she committed suicide, and she left behind her family. She had 2 sons. And the one thing that her friend said that she wished she had said to her was that you matter. And so to know that it's that simple to save someone's life, to save someone's life is, it's a pretty easy call. And we know from like the statistics that I've shared that you can say that to probably the person next to you, and they need to hear it. And I think another issue is that we blame people that have an illness. But, you know, calling, I like to kind of relate it to calling yourself a Christian. So you call yourself a Christian, you claim this faith and, you know, this life, and it affects everything that you think, everything that you do, and the way that you do it. And we praise each other for sharing that with people that don't even believe it. But when it's a mental illness and it affects you in the same way, it affects the way that you think, the way that you do things, we don't welcome that at all. Just like, you know, another opinion, we don't really like to hear somebody speak against us. And so the other issue is that, you know, the same way that, like, when you first become a Christian, when you first kind of claim Christ, you know, I'm Catholic, so I had to do that a few times through the sacraments. But when you do that, like, there's a fire inside of you and you want to share that with everybody and it doesn't go away. In the same way, a mental illness will not go away. There's not a cure for it. And it's expensive to treat. It's expensive to suppress. But we know that just community can help with that. So there are several people that, you know, growing up and through high school, I know that they committed suicide. There were 5 in 1 year. And so that changed a lot. That changed a lot just in the cities. It wasn't just affecting the people that had committed suicide or their families directly. The entire cities of like Plano and Richardson created new programs and things like that for the school. And so, you know, and seeing that it shouldn't have had to get to that point for us to make those changes, but we see that mental illness is like incredibly prevalent, especially in the younger ages. And it's gone from, I think it's 8.5% all the way to 20% of high school students that have a mental illness that's more related to depression and bipolar disorder. So kind of like my concluding remark is that the number of lives that are going to be affected by mental illness is only going to grow, but it's possible to make those effects positive for like millions of people if we just kind of remind each other every day that we're not stuck alone in the prisons of our mind.
Great job. Excellent.
Thank you, Mia. Again, this is an interesting topic. The organization, again, was appropriate. I think you did well trying to use an attention getter at the beginning to really get people to start thinking through how you are going to proceed in the speech by using that attention getter. So that's a good strategy that I think you did that well. I wanted to see you use your voice a little bit more in terms of kind of use different pitch throughout so that your voice doesn't stay flat. Okay, so you may want to keep that in mind for future. And I know sometimes when we speak, our personality does come through. If you tend to be a quiet person, then often that will come through in the way we speak. But so just work on kind of vary your voice, your pitch a little bit more as you go along, proceed to all those speeches. And I also think you did well citing sources, which is what we are talking about here in terms of making sure you build that credibility by citing authoritative sources throughout the presentation. You did that well. Now, when you get to the main points, I had some difficulties identifying your specific points throughout. maybe I may miss that, but I had some difficulty identifying, okay, what were the key points that you developed. I know in your preview you did mention, like, it sounded like it was going to be 2 points based on what I heard, but I couldn't really follow to see exactly what those points were.
Okay.
Okay. And which makes it into, you know, conclusion, whenever you have your points well aligned, well established, it's easy to do a review of those key points in your conclusion because they were really clear to you and to the audience. When you get to the conclusion, you can review those points and in addition to having your concluding remarks. Other than that, great job.
Thank you.
Yeah, good. Are we still waiting for Julie to come back? Sorry, okay. Can you hear me better now?
Yeah, it was me. You know, I call myself an iPod. Volume was down. Sorry, that was me.
That's fine because I was saying, okay, well, I'm not sure what.
It was fine until the first young lady started speaking, then my volume suddenly went down. I don't know what happened.
Wow, okay. Well, I hope that doesn't happen when you start speaking so that we can hear you. So,
I hope not, because there's no way I'll be able to repeat myself because I'll be in the bathroom throwing up afterwards. So,
And at that point,
I
want
to go now, but it's my turn.
Well, believe it or not, it has happened. All right, so. It has happened, but I hope it doesn't happen tonight. One of the things that I often say is this is a friendly audience. We are looking for your success, not your failure.
Yeah. So, thank you.
And we're cheering for you. All of us are cheering for you to do well. Okay. Okay? So.
Thank you. Okay.
All right.
Here I go.
So did you say you did not have any visual, correct?
No, I don't. Okay. So I'm just going to just try to hope you can see enough of me. So.
Yeah, I think that's fine there. So as long as if you're making hands gesture, as long as it comes at least up to here, okay. Then I will be able to see your hands. So.
Okay, not this. That's what I want to do. Okay.
No.
Okay.
You'll be just fine.
Okay, here I go. Okay. Okay. As a human resources professional, I'm going to talk to you about conducting a workplace investigation. And a workplace investigation will typically start when an employee comes to you to make a complaint. Maybe something was stolen, they were sexually harassed, they were assaulted, or they witnessed something happen, a theft or a crime committed. So what I'm going to talk about is how to successfully conduct a workplace investigation with a resolution and a conclusion where all the parties involved are satisfied with the outcome and the incident isn't repeated. When an employee comes to you with a complaint and they, you know, tell you there are witnesses and your goal is to sit with that employee and assure them that you're going to take this situation very seriously. But before you get into conversation, dialogue with this witness, you want to have them sign a confidentiality statement. And what that means is that the conversation that's going to take place between you and the employee and the witness present to this meeting will not repeat this outside of the room that they're in, just to keep the integrity of the investigation going. So as the employee is starting to tell you what happened, you are going to take notes, and the third person in the room is the witness, but they're also going to be a scribe as well. That way, in case you miss something, you have that second person in there, not only as a witness, but to write down the details as well. But you also want to keep a list of the witnesses that they name, because you are going to interview them later. So once you get all that information, you're going to type it up, put it in a format, and then you're going to create your questions for the witnesses. It's really hard to create questions because you don't know what's happened until after you meet with the employee. So once the employee gives their statement, then you're going to have a list of preset questions. Some of them may be just informal, just to get an idea of their surroundings, but then you may be asking some very sensitive questions. If for example, if it's a investigation for sexual harassment. So when you meet with those witnesses, as investigation proceeds, you're going to always start with the confidentiality statement, have them read it, you all sign it, and then you're going to let them know that you're going to ask them a series of questions, and some of them may be sensitive in nature. And then once you are asking those preset questions, other questions may arise. And then when you ask those questions, you have to indicate that you are the one asking the question, so that goes down. It's sort of like a court reporter taking down the names and the statements of everyone who's speaking. But you're asking the questions, and if they name other witnesses, you keep a side list going, because you'll have to interview those witnesses as well. And one thing to keep in mind is, once the employee initially comes to you with a complaint, it's important to conduct this investigation right away, because information can be forgotten. Employees may forget, you know, dates. They may forget times, maybe specific locations. Maybe you're in a big building, they can't remember what office it took place in. So it's very important to do this right away, because time is of the essence, because people do forget, especially if there are small details that could be very crucial to your investigation. So once you have met with all the witnesses and you've taken their statements, you're going to put everything together in a very formal format. And you and the witness that you've had during the entire investigation, you don't want to change out your witness, because it's important that they hear everything. You can put everything in a format, and you're going to discuss the information with your manager. For example, as an HR leader, I have someone that I have to report to, my CEO. So we would, you know, review this information, and we'll figure out, you know, what the best outcome is. Was there a crime committed? Was it serious in nature? Maybe someone maybe just been part of a conversation and they didn't do anything wrong. It depends. I've been part of investigations where people, you know, almost got in a fist fight over a pair of borrowed pants. And the most egregious investigation I've ever been part of was an employee who was disgruntled because they didn't get a position they applied for, and they threatened to poison the food at a doctor's baby shower with intent to harm that unborn child, because that is a doctor who did not want to employ them. So, and once you get going through these investigations, it could be just a simple, straightforward investigation, and many times I've seen a Pandora's box open. It went from a simple slamming the door on someone to, and this is a true story, slamming the door on someone to people sharing nude photos across the workplace. I mean, it just huge Pandora's box opened. And what I thought was going to start out as a simple investigation that only take a couple of days took about 2 or 3 weeks. It went on and on and on. And it was just a part of my life I'll never get back. But once you're, you know, done with the investigation, you put everything together, then you have to determine the course of action. What level of discipline? Is it going to be any? Is someone going to be suspended with or without pay? Is someone going to be terminated? You have to come to all this, and then if you are going to terminate someone, of course, you're going to let them know. But every party that you interview must get a response that the investigation was concluded. There could be write-ups from a simple counseling to a warning, final warning, up to termination. So it's important to be very detailed with this. And for those folks that you're writing up, you want to let them know that, you know, this is not going to happen again, and, you know, go into detail on that. But what else is very important about investigation is you can share this process with your peers. You can get feedback on how to do the maybe a better process, maybe things you should eliminate or add certain processes to your investigation, because it can always get better. And, you know, and then you just move on. Thank you. Okay, move on was not the ending I was hoping for, but I got a little nervous.
Good job.
Thank you.
Okay. Just let me know when you're ready. I don't know.
I think that was a power pose right there.
Yes, it was.
That's what I'm talking about.
Is that super girl?
Trying to amp myself up.
Okay. Thought that was the power woman.
I was like, oh, you can see me okay.
Yes, I can see you okay, and I can see your hands, which is good. That okay. Means I'll be able to see your hands gestures.
I will have a lot. I'm known to have hand gestures.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll be looking for them as well. Just a few words for Julie. Good job. I mean, you don't seem nervous at all, okay? Just in case you were wondering, Julie. And that's one of those things sometimes people don't understand. If you don't start your speech saying, I'm really nervous, often people don't even see that you are. So I don't know about the other members on that were listening. I did not see that you were nervous. Did anyone see that?
No. She's pretty smooth.
Yeah.
Well, I do want to share something for you. So remember before class started, we did the introduction, and I said sometimes I go blind when I'm speaking.
Right.
That was the case. I did not see anybody's face on my computer. I promise you.
Well, wow. You faked it very well because it looks like you are looking all of us straight in the eye.
Either I don't remember seeing you or I just, it's like a blank. A blank is weird. So
it's a little different being in front of a camera versus being in front of a live audience where people might be able to notice that more than the way we are here. So there is something we're lacking by being this way. But again, I couldn't tell whether you were nervous. And also, it looks like you were looking straight into the camera and talking to us.
Really?
So,
wow, okay.
Yeah. So just keep that in mind if you are in front of an audience and you look at them, even if you don't look straight or look at the ceiling or look everywhere except straight at them, then they won't know whether you're not making eye contact with them. So the camera is a little different than the live audience, but I think we could tell that you were really, it looks like you were looking at us through the camera and talking to us.
Okay,
cool. That was good. And I think your organization, and in terms of delivery, I think you are fine. As I said, as Anthony said, it was smooth. But organization and citing sources, it looks like you got to a point where you just stop at the end there was not a clear conclusion that I heard. Okay. So it's not like I missed that. You feel that you also...
Oh, yeah, totally. Okay. I could have kept going, but I had my timer here, and I just didn't know how to end it. So I didn't want to go over the 8 minutes. So it was
okay.
Before the ending off.
All right. Well, just for future, you don't need to do that. Okay. If you have a conclusion, you go ahead and conclude. Because that basically if you cut your conclusion off short, then basically what is you presenting the introduction, the body, and then basically the last part of the speech is non-existent. So you definitely don't want to do that. Even if you were, I don't think your conclusion will be more than 30 seconds.
Okay.
So you probably would not have gone too much over time if you only spoke for only 8 minutes, and then, you know, still conclude. Don't leave that off, because that's a major part of any presentation. So you want to make sure you show that you know, you understand the principles, and you follow.
It could turn out like the bad ending of a movie, you know. Like, exactly. What?
All right.
But, I got the feedback.
Yeah, no problem. All right. So we have Cassie going next.
Okay, taking some deep breaths, but I'm ready.
Okay, no problem. I'll get with you in just a second here. All right, Cassie, whenever you're ready.
Okay, so today I will be talking to you guys about the effects anxiety has on a person's body. When you look at someone, I don't know if you know anybody that has anxiety or suffers from panic attacks or anything, but, you know, when people go through anxiety, you don't usually realize it, and people don't usually realize someone is going through that. So I thought I would share with y'all the effects it has on a person mentally, physically, you know, kind of what it looks like. So the definition of anxiety is feeling of worry, nervousness, or kind of like an uneasiness feeling. It kind of sets in unexpectedly. That's normally the case, at least for me. I suffer from anxiety, so at least for me, it's kind of unexpected. But to some people, it can come about because they are out of control of a situation, or they have fear of a situation, the outcome, or anything like that. So I looked up on Anxiety and Depression Association of America some statistics of anxiety, and the most common mental illness is anxiety in the U.S. And it is kind of a mental illness, because it not only affects your physical body but your brain as well. The way you think, the way you react, do everything, you know, it has something to do with your body, or your brain, sorry. So it is the most common mental illness in the United States, and 18% of adults in the U.S. have it, so that would round out to about, like, 40 million people only in the United States that are diagnosed with an anxiety disorder. There's quite a few different types of anxiety, and the most common types are panic disorder, where that's just, you're just constantly on panic mode, PTSD, which is like post-traumatic stress disorder. A lot of people, you know, coming back from war have that, and that's very common for them. That's another very common type anxiety, and then another one is just obsessive compulsive disorder. And that, I think that's pretty common. I know quite a few people with that. So I will start off with telling y'all the story of my first panic attack. So I don't know if y'all have ever been to Cafe Brazil, but I was there by myself eating, and I just got my food. I was so hungry. And I started eating, and I felt this weird feeling come across me, and I just couldn't get myself to eat. I didn't know what was going on, but I just couldn't get myself to eat. I took one bite, I paid for my meal, and I left. And once I got to my car, I had a full-blown
Did she freeze on you guys?
Yes.
Okay. I thought my brain was playing with me, but okay.
I did not want that to happen. Oh, and she's gone too, it looks like.
Yeah, it looks like.
Oh. Yeah. She just kicked out too.
Yeah.
Oh, I feel bad for her.
Wow. Well, that's interesting.
I don't know if I've ever seen that before. That's
no.
I hope she comes back.
Well, we'd just give it a couple of minutes. If she doesn't come back, then we'll just have to proceed. I hope it's not power failure at her place that just kicks everything off. All right, I think we will go ahead and move forward with the next speaker. And if she comes back, then we'll decide how to deal with that.
Hopefully she didn't have anxiety and just exit on her own.
Yeah, it looked like a server dump.
Yeah, it doesn't look like it. There she is.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you, but we lost you there for about 2 minutes. We're not sure what happened.
It was my internet connection. It kind of just went out for a few minutes. So I had to let it come back.
Oh, okay. Well, I had you. Do you remember what position you were at?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so you're able to just pick up from where you left off without missing too much?
Yeah, I got it. I'm kind of concerned about the time. Were you timing me or like?
I was timing you, but I also stopped it.
Okay.
So I did. I did stop it. I had you at about about 4 minutes.
Okay.
Does that sound right?
I was at 3:30-ish, but
3:30-ish.
Catch up.
Okay, maybe I thought I had started it a little late, so I bumped it up. But I have 3:29. Based on when I started it, but I thought I was a little early. I mean, a little late, so I counted for that. That's why I said 4-ish.
Okay.
But yeah, so 3:29 okay, is what my clock is showing right now. So you
okay,
should
that's
be.
That's kind of what I have. Okay.
Okay, very good. Yes, I did stop the clock, so okay. You can go ahead and what I would do, you would probably want to recap before you pick back up so that at least you remind the audience where you were and what
okay. You're
moving on. Okay?
Okay.
Very good.
Apologies for the technical difficulties. I don't know what happened, but to recap, we were talking about anxiety and how it's, you know, the most common mental illness in the United States, and that a lot of people in the U.S. suffer from it, but people around them don't really know, you know, they kind of hide it or try and get out of talking about it. So I had this set up and now it's all gone. Okay. So after that being said, I'm going to inform you of the effects of anxiety on the body. And there are several different types of symptoms of anxiety. Most common for me, I'm basing this off of me after I've done my research, is insomnia, cardiovascular issues, and most definitely panic attacks. And these symptoms occur over time and sometimes instantaneously. And as I go through the symptoms, I hope you can understand how these impact a person's body. So the first main point I have is the symptoms of insomnia. And the definition of insomnia is the habitual inability to sleep. So you're kind of tired, you want to go to sleep, you just can't get there. You have so much going on in your head. So you just, the inability to sleep. And the effects of little to no sleep on the body can cause you to hallucinate. You can go into mania, weight gain, and there's impulsive behavior, you know, bad decisions, things like that. And ultimately, the loss of sleep leads to heart disease, high blood pressure, diabetes, things like that. So sleep is very important, and insomnia doesn't really help that. and that, unfortunately, that's a very common type of anxiety. The second symptom I have listed is cardiovascular effects, and let's see. What it does to the heart, it kind of, you know, not just during a panic attack, but, you know, anxiety in everyday life. If you constantly have, like, a rapid heart rate, I don't have these symptoms, but you have high blood pressure because your just heart's just racing. And that stuff can ultimately lead to heart failure later in life, not so much the next few years, but later in life, because you're just working your heart so fast. But be careful not to mistake a panic attack with a heart attack. I don't think it can lead to heart attacks or anything, but they're kind of similar, but not. And then my last point symptom of anxiety is panic attacks, which I just said, don't mistake those for heart attacks, panic attacks. And what they are a sudden and repeated attack of fear that lasts for several minutes up to, you know, it could be longer than that. Mine usually lasts 10 minutes tops. I don't think it's ever been, you know, that bad. And they come from, like I said, fear of a situation, if someone's out of control of a situation, just overwhelming anxiety and fear that a person has, and that just somehow, you know, this disorder they have, it just builds up and it gets, you know, into like panic mode, kind of like the fight or flight response. They just have a heightened sense of that. So what happens to the body during a panic attack is similar to a heart attack, like I've stated. Your heart races, you have, so a person can have, you know, stabbing chest pain, but I think it helps, or it does not help you to be able to breathe, because you do have shortness of breath. So I don't know if those associate with each other, but that's, you know, something I've witnessed. People can be dizzy, they can tremble, out of control feeling, like I said, sweating, and the fight or flight response. So those are all symptoms of a panic attack. So basically what I've gone over is what anxiety is and what a panic attack is, and how it affects a person's body, not just on the outside, but on the inside as well. And that before, I guess, we assume too much about people with anxiety, we must first think about how deeply anxiety can affect someone. And that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Katie.
Great job. Way to come back.
Sorry.
Thank you. And I just want to say, it took me, like, I was asleep overnight, like, so scared to present this speech because of my anxiety. I was like, oh, God, I'm not going to do this. So,
you did good.
I did it. Thank you.
Sorry, Jean-Claude, you're muted.
Oh.
What? You couldn't read lips?
Well, I'm trying to.
Actually, you did a good job. At least you know I was saying something. At least I was trying to say something, so that's good. All right, so we're learning a lot of great things in this class, including reading lips. Very good. So great job, great comeback. As what I said when I was muted is, congratulations, you have just overcome your anxiety.
Oh, I feel like it. I'm sweating and what else? All these symptoms? That's what's happening right now.
Okay. Well, guess what? We cannot tell.
Okay.
See, that's the good thing about this. You feeling all of those things, but you did not let it stop you from continuing to speak. Obviously, through the camera, we cannot see if you're sweating. We cannot see if you're red. So you look just fine to all of us. Did anyone see differently? I mean, am I the only person here who saw?
No, she was smooth.
Yeah, yep. I thought you maintained your composure. You even though you had to come back after a technical difficulty, you came back and did what you needed to do. So those are some of the things that could increase your anxiety, especially when you are in the middle of those situations. But you did not let that stop you. So I think you did well maintaining that composure and started and pick up where you left off and go on. So that's a great job. Okay.
Thank you.
So no one could tell.
Right. It seems like you have a fun personality, which kept me interested.
Thank you. Well. I was trying not to get in my kindergarten teacher head.
That's all right. We can get into the kindergarten audience mood.
That would make me feel better.
Okay. Yeah, I told you. We are a friendly audience. If you mm-hmm. want us to be kindergarten kids, you could have said, I want you to be kindergarten kids, and we'll be that. All
right? Oh, my gosh. Thank you.
You're welcome. Good job. Good job. Good organization. I love how you lay things out. I had no difficulty following you had great transitions. You repeated your point more than once so that people can know where you are and where you're going, which is part of organization of giving a speech, is how the speech is organized, which helped the audience really follow with you. And that was a great job. You had a complete conclusion that really reviewed your point and had the concluding remarks. So I think you hit all of those very well. So besides those other things, you know, you did well.
Thank
Good
you.
Job.
Okay, Andy, you know the bar is up now, right?
Man, I mean, I need you guys to be kindergarten kids. Thanks. Let's just go ahead and say it. Oh, man. Okay, let me share this screen.
I think I can be a kindergarten kid, except I'll be the oldest kindergarten kid you've ever seen.
Oh, man, that's awesome. Okay, let me share this with you guys. Oh, this is weird. Can y'all see that?
No.
Not yet.
Okay.
Are you sharing something? There you go.
Okay, y'all can see that?
Yes.
Okie dokie. All right, let's see. Okay. Well, I want to prime this speech a little bit if I can, because the focus here for my speech, don't start the timer if that's okay.
What?
I was just saying, don't start the timer.
Are you starting or not?
All right, I'll go ahead and start.
Okay.
All right. So I want to bring something to you tonight. It's team development's the main topic, but really it applies to more than just business. And my focus here is to give you from a business aspect, the team development piece, but you can apply this to ministry, family, and all kind of different areas. But this one's going to be focused on business, because for myself, I just spent the last 16 years in business leadership for Target Corporation. And so team development is one of those things that is super important for you. So my topic here is team development produces business growth. Okay. And my purpose is to inform listeners of the importance of team development in business. So I want to give you a live example here of, my brother-in-law, Chris Nash. He started out as a cart attendant at Walmart in California, and when he was 18 years old. And so 20 years ago, Chris decided he wanted to grow with the company. And so he asked his supervisor for ways to improve training programs and mentorship. And he was met with just little feedback or help from his store leadership team. The reality was is that Walmart just didn't have training and development programs established yet, which left all the training up to the individual store managers. So this lack of training and development for employees by his company left Chris just with a few options. And so, but though he never gave up, and he wanted to be a store manager one day, so he took classes at his local community college to further his education and to really pursue that route. But over the years, Walmart decided to increase their training programs for employees, and so they started to develop these things. And basically, it came down to his development with the company, and he continued to pursue it. And he said this, which I thought was really interesting. He said that the team development programs in his company were key in helping him leverage information and business partners to drive sales. His store continues to be one of the top sales volume stores in his region, and he attributes all this store success to his team development programs. So I thought that was really a great example that's personal to me and that I could share with you. But my thesis, moving to that, is modern corporations investing in team development, they obtain business growth. So a little preview here. One of the biggest assets of a company is its team. We know this. A more equipped team means workers who have developed knowledge and skills to effectively perform their jobs. So leaders who develop their teams are increasing the individual, the overall business of the company. Team development primarily consists of education, mentorships, and training programs. And these team members who are educated provide knowledge to the business. So teams who are mentored have experienced leaders guiding them to success in the company. These company training programs, they develop team members in business skills for immediate application. The companies who developed their team showed increased business growth despite competition and fluctuating stock market. Team development is crucial for raising sales profits, department revenue, and the overall business of the company. So let's consider the first thing companies can do to invest in team development and to increase business. The first one is education. And this hits home with us because this is what we're all in. We're all invested in education here. And it's the primary means for team members to develop as professionals and grow the business. So what does this look like? Hiring college graduates. That's us, right? So because the importance here is that really a lot of us, most of us have the textbook fundamentals without the bad business practices. We bring fresh perspectives and ideas and knowledge to the company. Team members with college degrees have the knowledge and skills of communication, reading and writing, mathematics, and logic and reason, but also a specific major that we can apply to the business. And also another important thing that's involved in all of our degree programs is an internship. So an internship allows businesses to grow profits by employing college students for lower wages many times, and yet it provides experience for them in their fields. So education is the primary means, and that's why I wanted to bring it to your attention, because here's a really good example. Mariel Jilk was a Target intern that I worked with for years. She was basically trying to be an executive team leader for Target Corporation. She made less hourly wage than most workers, but she was partnered with a mentor, and she helped contribute to department sales profits. And she said this, which I thought was interesting. The Target internship program allowed me to finish my degree while getting experience in the field. So I worked with her personally, and she went on to help the team increase sales by 6% in the department she was working in, which was health and beauty. So this also helped contribute, obviously, of course, to the overall sales of the store. And so she really brought motivation, she brought innovation, and this energy of executing tasks. So really a pleasure to work with her, and she's now an actual executive team leader of HR at Target. So really neat. So another main point that I have to bring is the mentorship piece. So mentorships are important for developing team members as leaders through work experience and delivering results. Mentors provide feedback for team members to develop their strengths and improve their weaknesses, which helps them become better business owners, which is exactly what happened in Mariel's case. And I thought this was interesting here. Abdel Martinez for Chick-fil-A said this. He said he's able to contribute to the company profits through his work in financial reporting and all the wisdom and guidance from his mentors. And you can actually view that testimonial video from their website, which is a really good video. And the next point really is mentees establish a network of partners to collaborate on work assignments, which helps them cultivate business profits. So Dr. Thomas Bateman, who is the experienced business consultant and professor of leadership and business at University of Virginia, he said this, and studied this a little bit in last class here at DCC. He said mentors or high-level managers ensure their mentees are introduced to top-level management, socialized into the organization, and increase their contributions to the business and grow earnings for employers. So he's a expert testimony and opinion on that, and I wanted to bring that to the table for you too. And then my last point is that training programs piece, super critical, because training programs develop team members in company knowledge and best practices for instant results. For instance, computer-based learning modules give team members on-the-job training in company best practices to improve profits. Company workshops and training programs foster skill development for team members through different business and learning activities. And this all boils down to many companies and businesses utilize team training programs through technology and media venues to develop team members in growing their overall business. And I wanted to provide you with another expert source here, Dr. Ricky Griffin, who is the department chair of business at Texas A&M University and professor of management. He said this, he said, web-based and computer media training work well at teaching participants exactly how to do tasks, which in many cases improves performance and increases business. So here's some stats for you. In a study, more than 3,100 U.S. workplaces, the National Center on Educational Quality of the Workforce found that an average 10% increase in workforce education led to an 8.6% gain in total productivity. And that's from Gregory Smith. And you can see his credentials there, president of Chart Your Course International. Also, Lori Miller, who's the former director of the Association of Talent Development in 2014, she said this, a study by the American Society of Training and Development showed that leading edge companies trained 86% of employees, while average companies trained only 74%. These leading edge companies also spent twice as much per employee. These companies invest the most in workplace learning, the study showed, yielded higher net sales per employee, higher gross profits per employee, and higher ratio in market to book value, which means they increase the company sales. So here's the summary of recap of what we talked about is today that companies are bombarded with fluctuating profits, high employee turnover, peer competition, declining budgets, and oftentimes businesses go bankrupt due to their lack of accountability in developing their teams. So effective leadership requires investment in team development to meet these company goals and increase outcomes. Many businesses are at risk of closures due to their competitors building business growth while their own profits decline. So every business needs to drive and develop their team members to compete in today's market. Companies who have invested in team development have succeeded in increasing their sales margins over their competitors who did not. So a solid team is one investment every business needs to thrive in an ever-changing economy. And here's what I want to say, kind of the conclusion of it. A couple of people that I met at Target. Team development's a proven method for companies to increase their business. So, of course, working at Target for all those years, I got to meet with our group vice president, Stephen Brinkley, and I spoke with him in 2015 about team development, and he said this, I thought this was pretty neat. He said, the team is our number one focus at Target since we have seen results in developing them as business owners for the company. Our team members that complete our training and development programs go on to significantly contribute to company sales. So for this reason, we spend millions of dollars innovating and rolling out training and development programs for our team members company-wide. So this is just another testimony that today most companies have a team development program for their employees since they know that the research and data point to these methods for effective business growth. And finally, someone who's a near and dear friend to me, my former mentor and executive team leader of human resources, Shane Almanza, said this. She said, a business is only good as its team. And I really didn't get that when I started 16 years ago, but I sure do now. I understand that. So I hope that blesses you and helps you kind of get an understanding of team development. Thank you.
Good job, Anthony.
I had a lot to get through.
That was really good.
Very good. Great great organization. Very well laid out. And I like the way you use all the different types of supporting material that we talked about. But, you know, testimony, yeah. Examples, statistics. So you combine all those things very well It looks like you had a lot more to say than we had time allowed. So
yeah, that was my only problem.
Yeah, and I understand that challenge. It's all great information. Trying to determine what should I include and what should I discard can be an issue. So, yeah, great job. Well organized. Look really comfortable. I think you encourage this student to at least finish their degrees.
Well, I hope so, because it's
I hope so. Right. Very good. So you cited sources very well, and this presentation was really based on real cases, real situations that you've dealt with, which kind of makes it more relevant, and it's not like far-fetched. You know, those are people, real people, at all different levels. So very great job. Well done. The visual helps us see quite a bit of the information you're presenting. However, you may want to think about not including so much information on slides because it can become too crowded. Now, if you want to have a version for, like, if you want to give someone a handout that has more information on it versus the visual that you use to present, then you can kind of streamline the one that you're using for the presentation while still have another version that has more information on it, so that the slides are not overly busy and crowded. So that
That makes sense.
Yeah, and improves the visual a little bit. Great job. Yeah, awesome. Appreciate it. That's unfortunate. We didn't have a 15-minute presentation instead of, because you would have much more information for that than a 6 to 8 minutes. But a great job. Wow, it took us up to 8 o'clock to go through these presentations. I guess we definitely would not have gone through all the presentations today had everyone decided to show up to present tonight. So I am glad we only had this number, and the rest of the students will be uploading the video or whichever one other ways they presenting the speeches. So at least that takes us to this point. And I don't know, I'm ready for a break. And is there anyone else?
I kind of want to hear someone else. This is cool.
You'd like to hear someone else?
This is good information.
Yes, that's what I was trying to tell you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to tell you. This is one of those classes that can be really enriching if students take it seriously and we actually do good research and present valid information. So you can understand how many students. We have 17 students in this class. If you listen to 17 substantive speeches, you are being enriched by just your classmates in class. So it's not just the teacher, but all of us really are contributing to the learning environment and this. So
and we learned more about everybody who presented here today.
Exactly.
You're just not a bunch of pretty faces.
Except, okay, well, wow. I was going to say.
Don't pop yourself out. Don't.
I feel pretty now.
Oh, you feel pretty now?
I might just go for a walk and feel pretty.
Very good.
Well, after this speech, you should feel pretty.
Rachel,
yes,
we did see you on screen very well too. So you are included in this conversation,
yes,
both great. You and Mia, because I know when I am really hooked on the people that are online, the people in the classroom can feel isolated. We don't want that to happen. We want you to feel included in this conversation as well, okay?
We're good.
Good.
Can I just share something before we go on break? I've been dying to say this, and holding back, not cutting people off is something I really work hard on, but I found out Monday, and I'm the only person who knows this, is that my new grandbaby is a girl, and they're having a gender reveal party on Saturday. So I'm excited.
That's exciting.
Very good.
The baby weighs 1 pound so far.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
She's due in September. But, yeah, I went to the doctor with my daughter and her fiancé and his parents, and they did the sonogram. And on the sonogram, it looks like a big baby, you know.